Welcome to Copyright Law at the Federal Circuit. I'm Ala Policastro, CLE advisor for the Beverly Hills Bar Association. Today, I am delighted to introduce our speaker, Professor Clark AC. Professor AC has been professor at BYU Law since 2014. Prior to entering legal academia, he worked at Amazon's Lab 126 and supported the Kindle Fire and Amazon Fire teams. Professor AC has worked in private practice in the fields of technology, transactions, intellectual property licensing. His research and teaching interests focus on intellectual property law, technology, and innovation. He has authored publications relating to patents, copyrights, open source software licensing, and information privacy. He teaches courses in intellectual property law, information privacy, and contracts. We can't wait to hear what he has to share with us today, and I'm turning it over to him.
Great. Thank you so much for the introduction, Ala. I'm really happy to be here. I wanted to give a little bit of background about this paper. It's close to publication, Copyright Law at the Federal Circuit. It really was sparked by an interest in the Supreme Court case in Google v. Oracle. That was a case, it's a copyright law case, that dealt with the issue of fair use in with respect to software, copyrighted software that Oracle had acquired from Sun Microsystems, the Sun Microsystem API that Google had used in Android. And the reason this, you know, As Ala mentioned, I did technology transactions in the past, and so a lot of the technologies in play were things that I'd worked on or had some familiarity with. And the key thing that became of interest in this case was the Court of Appeals that the case came from. It was the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, and people thought that was curious and said, how did this copyright law case come from this Court of Appeals? The Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, as many of you likely know, is the Court of Appeals for all patent law appeals, not copyright law appeals. And so you have the Supreme Court, this case coming from the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. It's a copyright law case. And like, how did this happen? Why did it come from Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit? And a lot of folks, commentators, academics, sort of poo-pooed the Federal Circuit as a copyright law court. You know, they view it as a patent law court that had patent law expertise and specialization, but not a court that really should be deciding important copyright law cases. And in the Supreme Court case, there were two previous Federal Circuit cases, I'll use Federal Circuit short for the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, that the Supreme Court was examining as part of its decision. And so I really wanted, the reason I wanted to do this paper was to really look at, rather than rely on anecdotal sort of commentaries about the Federal Circuit and its expertise or lack thereof in copyright law, I really wanted to dig into, what is this court's role in copyright law? How often does it take copyright law cases, decide them? How does it decide them? Does, you know, the court, is it functioning well as a copyright law decision maker, or are some of the concerns about it, justified? And, I was just about to ask, about the slides I have, just help us, guide us through the presentation. Let's see, am I able to make these move?
Like, I'll be assisting with the slide control.
Okay, I'll just, so you can go to the next slide, please. And by the way, if you have questions or comments as we go through the presentation, please feel free to pose them. I'd love to hear your thoughts and comments as much as we can get to them. I should mention my My co-author, Dan Hinkeman, is not able to be with us. He is he was a student of mine here at BYU Law, and we worked on the paper together. He's now in practice in the Bay Area, but he's not able to be with us today. Okay. So the Federal Circuit, it's this patent law court that's occasionally deciding important copyright law decisions. And like I mentioned, the Google v. Oracle decision at the Supreme Court really brought this, not really brought it to light, but really made people think more about, wait, why is this court, this Federal Circuit, deciding copyright law cases? And a lot of people felt like the Federal Circuit had really messed up the copyright law issues in their decisions before it got to the Supreme Court. You know, the Supreme Court case was about fair use, but the Federal Circuit had decided other issues as well, including the copyrightability of API software in play. We won't get into those details, but a lot of folks really sort of upset with the Federal Circuit's role in copyright law in the preceding decisions. And so there's been a lot of commentary in light of the Google v. Oracle Supreme Court decision. So the way that these cases get to the Federal Circuit, primarily one of two ways, okay? First is Court of Federal Claims. All appeals of that court's decisions go to the Federal Circuit, Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. So Court of Federal Claims is deciding when someone wants to sue the federal government for money damages, then that's the court they go through. And so if you have a copyright law claim against the federal government, you go through that court. And then if you lose that decision and want to appeal it, the appeal would go to the Federal Circuit. So that's one primary way that copyright law cases get to the Federal Circuit. This becomes an important piece of the Federal Circuit / copyright law puzzle because in a lot of the results that we'll talk about later. The other way that perhaps people are more worried about in terms of how copyright law cases get to the Federal Circuit is this second one. And this was the case in the Google v. Oracle case, cases that initially include patent claims. So in Google v. Oracle, it was originally Oracle v. Google, and then the plaintiff and the defendants are switched once it got to the Supreme Court. But in that case, when Oracle sued Google, for infringement of its copyright based on using the API, the Oracle API in Android, they also included a patent law claim in their initial filings. That claim, the patent law claim, didn't have legs and was not part of the case from pretty early on. It got dismissed. But because the case initially included a patent law claim, that means any appeal of any subject matter within the case goes to the Federal Circuit. And so even though in Google v. Oracle, the patent law claims went away pretty quickly, the remaining claims were copyright law claims. The appeal goes to the Federal Circuit. So this is, I would say, the more controversial way that copyright law cases get to the Federal Circuit. The appeals of Court of Federal Claims decisions hasn't really produced very many notable decisions. A lot of them are per curiam and relatively uncontroversial. And so that's why the Court of Federal Claims opinions and some of the results I tend to separate and exclude from some of the results, just because they're just a different beast. There's a lot of pro se litigants. There might be really significant bias in favor of the federal government in those cases. That's just speculation. I don't have evidence of that. But we'll get into some of how I differentiate between federal claims, opinions, and the ones where a patent claim was involved earlier on. Okay, next slide, please. Thank you. Okay, so this slide just sort of lays out why are people worried about the Federal Circuit deciding copyright law cases? Again, a lot of this came to, became a bigger issue, I would say, during the Google v. Oracle decision, and so before and after. But I would say there are four major concerns that I have found from scholars and commentators about the Federal Circuit's role in copyright law. First is bias toward rights holders. So the Federal Circuit is frequently accused of exhibiting biases towards patent holders, the rights holders. Now it's I don't know, you read this quite often in academic articles and online news in particular. I don't know that there's really, there is some evidence backing this up. I mean, the Federal Circuit was instituted to bolster patent rights and make it a patent law more uniform, because it was at the time the court was instituted in 1982, there was some amount of disarray in patent rights from one circuit to the next. Of course, that disarray exists in a lot of different domains, but there was a feeling that patent rights are important. They're important to innovation. They're important to innovators. And so we need to do something here. So the Federal Circuit was instituted as the Court of Appeals for all patent law claims. And part of their mission was really to shore up patent rights, and bolster them in some respects. And I think that happened. And so the claim is, you know, given this mission, this court has sort of a bias in favor of rights holders and having sort of strong IP rights in place. And so the worry is in copyright law that you're going to get a similar bias exhibited by the court, that copyright holders are going to fare very well in the Federal Circuit, and those that are being accused of infringement are not going to fare well. And I think when in the two preceding decisions before the Supreme Court's decision in Google v. Oracle were pointed to as strong evidence of, look, they're favoring Google, they're misconstruing copyright law to protect the copyright owner in this case, vis-a-vis Google. So that's a significant concern that people have expressed about the Federal Circuit and its role in copyright law. Related to this is the second point, which is, look, this is a patent law court steeped in patent law ideology. How are they going to decide copyright law cases other than through a patent law lens, right? And the two regimes are distinct, even though the Supreme Court has said they have a historic kinship. The Supreme Court has also said these are different regimes, right? Patent law protects inventive ideas that otherwise satisfy the Patent Act requirements, whereas copyright law excludes protections from ideas, no matter how creative or innovative they are, and generally applies to the expression, the creative expression of ideas. And so some have worried, like, they're going to be biased in favor of rights holders, and they're going to be so biased because they're not going to be able to apply copyright law without letting their patent law expertise affect their decision-making, okay? is sort of the second main concern that I've seen scholars and commentators express. The third one is a big one, and again, this is this concern is something folks expressed in the context of Google v. Oracle, which is, look, litigants are smart. Plaintiff lawyers are smart. They're going to see that this court favors rights holders and that they let patent law ideology and doctrine sort of affect their view of copyright law. And so enterprising plaintiff lawyers are going to, if they have a copyright law claim and they're in the Ninth Circuit and they feel like, you know, the Ninth Circuit, it's a bad history here. They're beholden to the tech industries or the tech companies. Now, this is not what I think. This is just might be some of the thinking that goes into this gamesmanship. We're in the Northern District of California. We've got Judge Alsup. We think he's pretty favorable to uses of copyrighted works and finding those to be what's called fair use. So how do we get out of the Ninth Circuit if this comes to an appeal? We stick a patent law claim in there. Any patent law claim will do. Doesn't matter how strong or weak or trivial it is. Just include it in the initial claim. Somewhat plausible. It gets dismissed. Okay. We lose the, you know, we lose with Judge Alsup or, you know, in the district court. Within the Ninth Circuit, well, the appeal is going to now go to the Federal Circuit. And maybe that's better than the Ninth Circuit judges. We think our chances are better in with the Federal Circuit. And this, you know, patents have been exploding for decades. There's explosion in utility patents, design patents. Any patent law claim will do to ensure that our copyright law appeal, the real heart of the matter in many cases, will go to the Federal Circuit. Okay, so there's that gamesmanship concern that is linked to the first two concerns as well. Sorry, can you go back to the previous slide? Thanks. The last concern is this legal uncertainty and precedent inconsistency. So again, this was raised in the Google v. Oracle case. The Federal Circuit was supposed to be applying Ninth Circuit law when it was making the decisions that ultimately were appealed to the Supreme Court. And many people looked at its application of Ninth Circuit case law and said, this isn't Ninth Circuit case law. This is like the Federal Circuit doesn't know what it's doing. And it's creating this weird precedent that technically isn't binding on the Ninth Circuit, but then litigants with this sort of confusion are confused themselves and don't really understand what is Ninth Circuit precedent. Do we just ignore the Federal Circuit decision? We have to take it into account in some respects, perhaps. Just creates this like legal uncertainty that is not good for decision makers in business and elsewhere. Okay. So those are the four big, I think. I mean, there are others, but I think categorizing the four main concerns that folks have expressed about the Federal Circuit as a copyright law decision maker and what is motivating me and Dan to say, okay, well, let's, you know, we've got Google v. Oracle or Oracle v. Google decisions, fine. What else has the Federal Circuit decided in terms of copyright law? What can we learn from those decisions about the Federal Circuit as a copyright law decision maker? Next slide, please. Okay. So that's basically what we did. We went into Westlaw and we wanted to fetch all of the Federal Circuit copyright law decisions that we could find, okay? And perhaps not surprisingly, there are not a ton on there. Now, we found 56 majority copyright opinions, I think 3 concurrences and 6 dissents included in those decisions. Unless I state otherwise, when I'm referring to results, I'm referring to the majority opinions in those decisions throughout the remainder of the presentation. Now, you know, prior to the E-Government Act of 2002, judges, courts were not required to publish their, you know, their unpublished decisions or opinions. They weren't required to make them available electronically anywhere. And so it may be that there are unpublished opinions lurking somewhere in the shadows of the Federal Circuit that Westlaw has not been able to get access to. But that's just a limitation of the study in terms of, is this the universe of opinions? We think it's most of it. You know, Westlaw is in the business of getting everything and posting everything they can find and get access to. So we trust their business incentive means that what we found is most of what the Federal Circuit has decided in terms of copyright law. Now, of course, you know, you might, the question might arise in your mind, well, opinions are one thing, right? Opinions are sort of rare occurrences. They're, what about just filings and things that are settled and don't make their way into an opinion? The Federal Circuit in the patent sphere has been accused of making a lot of decisions, or not just accused, there's evidence of they make a lot of decisions without issuing an opinion. So you could also have that as a factor too. So these are all like imperfections of the study. Could do an additional study to look at filings rather than just opinions. But that's not what we've done here. So there's just some things to think about in terms of what exactly we're looking at, the universe of things that we're looking at. And, you know, I have in this slide, we reviewed for party outcomes, citation pattern, patent law influence, jurisdictional trends. We extracted other information from each opinion that's pointed to in the paper. But these are just some of the highlights that we were reading and digging through these opinions, this type of information we were trying to gather. Next slide, please. Okay. So I think, a number of important findings, I think, with respect to the Federal Circuit as a copyright law decision maker. I think you could sum up a lot of what we're going to talk about in the remainder of the presentation as the Federal Circuit seems to be doing just fine as a copyright law decision maker, finding relative, like, compared to other circuits, and I'll point out some comparisons as we go through this, but they seem to be doing similar to other courts, and they have similar volume of copyright law decisions as other circuits. And so I think that's the overall finding, is I think they're doing okay, and there's no sort of basis. Some people have said we should change the Federal Circuit's jurisdiction so that copyright law appeals are not so easily making their way into the Federal Circuit. And I just don't think, based on what we were able to review, as imperfect as it is, that there's a strong basis for that. So one interesting result, I think, is that, you know, there's this worry I mentioned in the beginning. There's this worry that the Federal Circuit unduly favors rights holders, right? And decides in favor of them. In the majority opinions, just not the case. Defendants actually win much more frequently than plaintiffs do. Now, some of this percentage is a little bit hard to trust, and I go into this in the paper. There's different ways you can split this, but when you take out federal claims decisions, because those are overwhelmingly in favor of the the defendant, the government, then the percentage goes down, right, in terms of defendant's win percentage. And so it starts to look kind of like a normal court, I think, in terms of expectations of who win and who wins and who loses. The famous Arrow Klein hypothesis, the win rate should be about 50%, because you know, if a case is clearly in favor of one party or the other, it'll probably settle, or it will resolve earlier. It's only where you have kind of a coin flip type of scenario that parties are willing to continue to forge ahead and fight it out. And so I think we're close to that in terms of what we were able to find from the opinions. And so the Federal Circuit kind of looks like another court in terms of who wins and who loses. We also found that in some domains, you know, there's this worry that Federal Circuit, again, is really pro rights holders. But in like DMCA cases, for instance, Digital Millennium Copyright Act cases, there are very few of these among all of the circuits' decisions that courts have written. But the Federal Circuit has articulated in its DMCA cases the most pro-defendant interpretation of the DMCA that is available. So we just didn't find evidence of systemic bias toward copyright holders. And you might actually say it points in the opposite direction. Although I think, honestly, the evidence is inconclusive in some respects too. But I just don't think, based on what we were able to discover, that there was just a lot of evidence of this court acting in the way that, you know, headlines and anecdotes suggest. Next slide, please. So this second finding is interesting. So when we read the opinions, we looked for explicit references or comparisons to patent law, because again, you might not expect if the court is deciding copyright law case that they would, why would they refer to patent law? But there is this narrative, as I was suggesting at the beginning, out there that that's what the court is doing. Like they're pulling in patent law to decide copyright law issues, and that can't be a good thing. So we read through the opinions, and we found about a quarter of the copyright law majority opinions referenced, however fleetingly, sometimes it's literally just like a citation to a patent law case to bolster their reasoning, but that a quarter of them explicitly referenced patent law in some form or another. That might actually seem high. We don't have great points of comparison. I haven't done this sort of analysis for other courts of appeal, and so it might be quite a bit lower than found here. But the other thing we did is we actually read through the references. We read the opinions, and when we found a patent law reference, or we did a qualitative assessment, and none of them stuck out as like, oh, this is an egregious application of patent law, which I think you would expect to be the case, right? These are very competent, high-level lawyers deciding the cases, and they're doing their homework, and they might refer to patent law here or there, but when they do, they're doing so in a reasonable way, it seemed to, based on our qualitative reading of the cases. Now, this is limited, right? Like the judges on the Federal Circuit might be influenced in all sorts of ways by patent law that just looking in the opinions can't account for. So there's other pieces of evidence that you might gather and look at to further address that question. But for the scope of our project, we didn't go beyond that. We were just reading the opinions to see what we could discover on this front. And we just didn't see a lot of like patent influence, at least explicitly. Now, you know, in the back of their minds, they might be thinking about patent law all day, every day when they're addressing copyright law issues and just not putting it in the opinions. So we can't really account for that, but that is a limitation of this finding. Next slide, please. So I think, in further to this point of the Federal Circuit being a relatively decent copyright law court, they have some key advantages, right? They hear cases from nearly all circuits except the DC circuit. They have opinions that they've written interpreting and implying copyright law from every other circuit. And why is that an advantage? Well, they have in some ways broader exposure to copyright law than other circuits, frankly. Some of the circuits, 10th Circuit, 8th Circuit, just have very little copyright law activity. And the cases they do have, they're just, they're applying and trying to come up with their approach to a particular copyright law issue. And that might be great, but it's also constrained in terms of exposure. Whereas the Federal Circuit is, they have their own copyright law precedent that they develop in the context of the claims from the Court of Federal Claims. So that's like their original jurisdiction where they're deciding copyright law cases. But even there, in those cases, they're pulling in Second Circuit, Ninth Circuit, the two big copyright law heavyweights. And just they have more familiarity and exposure to all the different circuits because they have cases from the different circuits. And they're also developing their own copyright law and relying on other circuits' copyright law decisions. One area that they, develop niche expertise in is software copyright. And I would say DMCA, they have I did a DMCA project as well, and there's just very few copyright or DMCA opinions out there, and the Federal Circuit happens to have several of them. But software copyright, that was the subject matter of Google v. Oracle, and the Federal Circuit decides that that's the highest number of opinions they have deal with software copyright. So, people might be dissatisfied with how they handled software copyright in the Oracle v. Google cases. But they actually have a decent amount of exposure to software copyright overall, which might lend credibility to how they approach software copyright cases. And I guess I will say on that, it's not terribly surprising that the highest number of, it's another thing we coded for, but subject matter, and that software copyright cases are there. They have the highest number of decisions in that area because, right, software subject to copyright, but also obviously a place for patents to apply to. Now, that leads to the concern of some that the Federal Circuit's going to create mischief and software copyright. They're getting all these cases. There's this gamesmanship possibility, just easy to throw in a patent claim for a software copyright case. I'll come back to that. But for now, I'm just saying they actually have a decent amount of exposure to number of circuits, number of subject matters, copyright law issues. We also coded for that, and they have pretty broad exposure in that regard too. And they are a patent law court primarily, and so they have a very strong technological edge vis-a-vis some other courts of appeal when dealing with something like software and a copyright case dealing with software. So I think these factors might suggest that actually the Federal Circuit has some competencies that other courts of appeal may not possess in terms of applying copyright law in certain domains. Next slide, please. So the gamesmanship issue, this is probably, I don't know. This finding is inconclusive at best. I don't have any really strong feelings or thoughts about whether this is happening or not based on what we are able to gather. So overall, a little less than one non-federal claims court copyright cases per year. Now, opinions per year, which means there might be a lot more cases that are sort of headed to the Federal Circuit, copyright law cases, and they're just settled or they're dismissed or whatever, right, early on. So again, the limitation that arises because we're focused on opinions is a real one, but it is what it is in the context of what we're doing in this study. Now, that number rises to a little over one opinion a year when you exclude the years where the E-Government Act did not apply. If you recall, the E-Government Act is this act that requires courts to make electronically available all opinions that they produce, whether published or not. And so once that act applies, the number does rise. That might be just because litigation has been increasing too, or it might be because prior to the E-Government Act, there were actually more opinions that just weren't coming to light. And after it, there were. But I don't know that based on this study, we get a very great answer to this question of forum shopping. And you might think actually one opinion per year is decent evidence pointing towards forum shopping. And when you look at other courts of appeal, we did some comparison and there are some other courts of appeal that don't have a heavy copyright law caseload are similar in terms of the number of opinions those circuits are producing with respect to copyright per year. So it might actually be like we wouldn't expect them to be producing one opinion per year. That's actually evidence of forum shopping by plaintiffs. I think this study doesn't really have great evidence one way or the other. But it's, I think, something to continue to track. It is one of the major concerns about the Federal Circuit as a copyright law court. The reason, by the way, in case it wasn't clear, the reason we exclude Court of Federal Claims opinions from the analysis here is because those cases are not relevant to the gamesmanship issue, because all appeals of that court go to the Federal Circuit, whether or not they include a patent law claim as well. So there's no gamesmanship going on with those cases. Okay, next slide, please. Now, on the last concern about, the Federal Circuit, they make these erroneous decisions. They misapply Ninth Circuit law, case law, and then the Supreme Court comes and cleans up some of the issues. But some of the issues the Supreme Court did not address. And so we have this lingering, like, what is the standard for copyrightability with respect to software? We thought we had the Ninth Circuit standard and other circuit standards that had been around for decades. Now, Federal Circuit has muddied the waters, so to speak, and misapplied Ninth Circuit law in that regard. And Supreme Court didn't clean up that issue. They left it they didn't address it. So the concern is federal circuits taking all these cases from different circuits, misapplying the circuit's case law, messing everything up. I think it's an overblown concern. I think the primary reason is that although the federal circuit has taken and written opinions applying and interpreting case law from each circuit with the exception of the DC circuit, it's like one or two cases per circuit. I forget off the top of my head which circuit it might have been. It's probably either in the Ninth or the Second Circuit where they've had a few more than that, but still not very many. There may be some high-profile missteps, as some people claim, in Oracle v. Google. I tend to agree on one of those opinions in particular. But I don't think that's any different, I guess I would say, from other courts of appeal. I recently did a study on the substantial similarity doctrine in copyright law, read thousands of opinions from every circuit, in the United States, and came away from that study feeling like most circuits are struggling in this area. And so I don't think the Federal Circuit I don't know that they're doing spectacularly in copyright law on this front, but I also don't know that they're doing any less or worse than other courts of appeal for the Federal Circuit. Okay. And again, I think they do their homework. They're most free. We also counted like citations to different sources of authority. And the Federal Circuit is pretty normal in terms of who they cite. They're citing Supreme Court, the Feist decision. Second and Ninth Circuits are the two behemoths in copyright law. And they rely on those circuits' case law, even when you exclude, even if you're like, let's say you're doing an Eighth Circuit or a Fourth Circuit or a Fifth Circuit case, they will still incorporate and rely on just a wide variety of legal sources from other circuits just to, you know, I think is evidence of them doing their homework. This is not a really strong finding, but just based on like the numbers, I just don't think it's a huge concern at this point with the Federal Circuit as a copyright law decision maker. Okay. Next slide, please. So, I mean, the basic conclusion is sort of what I've been talking about all along. I think the Federal Circuit is a competent copyright court currently. Its decisions, at least in written opinion form, did not strike either me or Dan in our review of them as like just an outlier or egregious in any sort of way. It seems to be they're doing their job here similar to other courts of appeal. In fact, they might have some pretty significant advantages over other courts of appeal because of their tech expertise and IP law experience in general, right? They do patent law, they do some trademark law, they do copyright law. So they actually, you know, there's often the way to make an IP scholar or practitioner grumpy is to have a news article that refers to a trademark thing and it's actually a copyrighted thing or a patented thing. Just the mixing up of the terminology, but the Federal Circuit mixing up of the different legal regimes, which is pretty significant. But the Federal Circuit has familiarity with all of these different legal regimes. And I think that's actually a relative advantage for it in terms of navigating thorny copyright law issues. And I think that comes into play particularly for its software copyright law decisions, its most frequent subject matter in its opinions. And, you know, maybe maybe its advantages in that regards, tech expertise and IP law expertise, actually make it a much more suitable court of appeals for deciding those types of cases than, say, the 10th Circuit. So where I live, my home circuit, where basically copyright law opinions are almost non-existent, or the 8th Circuit, some of these other sort of low volume circuits in terms of copyright law decision making. Now, I do think it's, and this is what I sort of conclude with in the paper, I do think it's really important to continue to monitor its role, particularly with respect to software cases. Because I think if the Federal Circuit became what you might call the de facto Supreme Court of software copyright law cases, that could be good in one respect. You might create a lot of uniformity and eliminate some of the, from circuit to circuit, lack of clarity with respect to software copyright law issues. Although that was one of the main complaints about the court's Oracle v. Google decisions, was that we had clarity, we had uniformity. I don't know, I think folks might have exaggerated the amount of uniformity, but there was some precedent that, you know, being in industry at the time, we advised clients, both internal and external, when I was at a law firm, about software copyrightability issues all the time, based on that seeming sort of accepted standard or uniformity with respect to software copyright. And after the Oracle v. Google decision to the Federal Circuit level, that sort of upended things. So I think this is in terms of the Federal Circuit as a copyright law decision maker, if really most important software copyright decisions are going to the Federal Circuit and that court becomes sort of the de facto Supreme Court of that subject matter with respect to copyright law, could be a good thing, useful thing in terms of creating uniformity, but it also, depending on that uniformity and what they do with copyright law, it might actually get in the way of software innovation, depending again on what they do with copyright. And again, some people think that was what happened with the Federal Circuit's Oracle v. Google decisions. But I think there's no need at present time to alter the jurisdiction of the court. It gets a steady diet of copyright law decisions from the Court of Federal Claims, and is writing about one opinion per year from other circuits. And so it seems to be functioning relatively well on that front. But again, the software copyright law thing, I think, is the major thing to continue to monitor going forward. I can stop there for now. And if people have questions or comments that they'd like to offer, I'd be happy to entertain those.
All right. So it does look like we had a few questions coming in through our email help desk. Regarding findings or your methodology, how you note reviewing quite a few majority copyright opinions, how do you control for selection bias, especially in less reported or unpublished opinions?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think so. Westlaw, there's absolutely selection bias here. There's no way to really, when you're picking written opinions, you are biased, like your selection is biased. And so I've tried to address that in the paper just by noting, like, I have a discussion in the paper about this very thing, that, you know, written opinions might tell us certain things, but they might actually mask a lot of other things that we're curious about. And so I've tried to not overstate the findings in light of this bias. The other thing about that question that I would respond to is just that, like, unpublished decisions, like the difference between published and unpublished decisions is still a very real one. But since the e-government act and where everything is now, like opinions just in general are electronically available, and Westlaw and other services sort of suck them all up, put them all, you know, post them, include them in their database, that aspect of the bias, I think, is not really, is no longer, just because they're all effectively in a different definition of the word published by these services. That wasn't the case prior to the E-Government Act, which went into effect, is 2002, and then I think the effective date was 2003 to 2004. So before that, there definitely was, like, even more bias and difficulty because unpublished decisions were not available. But since at least the E-Government Act, I think that concern lessens or is diminished quite a bit.
Okay, I have another one. If the Federal Circuit leans pro-defendant in most DMCA cases, what factors might you think explain this, or do you expect this to persist as digital enforcement issues evolve?
It's a good question. Both decisions were written by Judge Rader, who is no longer with the court. And it was just an interpretation of the DMCA that I don't think most other circuits, particularly Ninth Circuit, has followed. And I think when you read most case books and talk to most people, the Federal Circuit position is definitely a minority one that most folks don't follow. Maybe because people look at it and think, well, you've just misapplied the underlying circuit law. That's not actually how it should be interpreted. So the DMCA is interesting. I did a study on the DMCA as well and tried to find all the relevant opinions out there. And there's literally, like, in terms of court of, like, appellate decisions, like, I'd have to look. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but there's just so little out there. And I have some sort of suppositions in the paper as to why there hasn't been more. I don't know if there's not robust enforcement. I think it's a curious piece of legislation that just hasn't resulted in much interpretation or decision making. I think the second part of the question was, can you repeat it? Do I expect that to, in the digital sphere, to, like, increase?
Yeah, let me find that again. I think it was to expect it to persist as digital enforcement issues evolve.
Like, what to persist? Sorry, I just want to make sure I understand the question. Just the lack of decisions?
I think it may refer to the circuit leaning pro-defendant.
Oh. It's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's been some time since anyone has really followed the Federal Circuit on its DMCA interpretation. I tend to agree with the Federal Circuit on its interpretation of the DMCA, just because I think its interpretation is basically you have to have a predicate copyright infringement offense, like underlying copyright infringement offense, for the DMCA to apply. Ninth Circuit has applied or interpreted differently, just say the DMCA is its own beast, like it doesn't necessarily require copyright infringement happening. And so I sort of side with the interpretation of the Federal Circuit, but the Ninth Circuit is sort of the leader in terms of it in the Second Circuit, but the Ninth Circuit even more is the leader in terms of copyright law issues. Other circuits follow it. And so if I had to predict, I would think that probably folks will continue to follow the Ninth Circuit going forward. The DMCA was enacted in 1998. That's like ancient history now. And so it's probably due for, I mean, they have the biennial or the triennial, annual, like where they approve new exceptions to the DMCA, which is useful in terms of updating it in light of current developments in technology. But I think the DMCA itself could use an update, like many other pieces of legislation that basically, by the time they're enacted, the world has moved on. And so trying to keep up with technological development is often difficult to do legislatively. And it, I think, is one reason why we sort of sometimes leave it to the courts to try to keep up with what's changing. But my prediction would be Ninth Circuit position is pretty entrenched and it will probably continue to prevail.
All right, great. Thank you. It doesn't look like we appear to have any more questions in the Q&A regarding your presentation. So I would say that this concludes today's presentation. Thank you so much, Professor Acey, for your time. And thank you so much to our audience for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
You may be eligible for CLE credit in your state. Visit bhba.org/podcasts for more information.